The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Last weekend, Munster beat the South African club Lions at Thomond Park, but the match was mired in controversy after one player made an allegation of spitting, which is an area of foul play that can have severe consequences for offenders. But what exactly causes players to engage in destructive behaviours such as biting, eye gouging, headbutting and, of course, spitting? And what can be done from a psychological perspective to prevent escalation in the heat of the sporting moment? Well, our reporter Simon Tierney has been investigating all of this and he joins us now. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, Claire.
Good to see you. So explain to us what happened at the match in Munster, firstly.
Okay, so in the 61st minute of the Munster game last weekend, the hooker Dermot Barron, he got up out of the ruck and he accused one of the other players of spitting at him in the face. Now, the referee immediately paused play and a review was done using video replay, but they couldn't actually find an angle which showed the incident. So the situation has resulted in an inconclusive verdict, I suppose, without proper evidence to back it up, to back up the claim. Here is how it played out on the day.
Foul play. Spit in the face. Spit in the face.
Say again?
Spitting in the face. There's a spit in the face.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, time off.
Thank you.
Craig Casey.
I want to speak with this guy.
You've heard what he said.
Can you speak to me? What's the allegation?
He spat in my face.
Did you?
Yeah, he spat on me, in my face.
Over there,
over this
on the rock.
Yeah.
Okay,
please have a look.
We have a serious allegation for foul play. Please, Stefano, put that on the screen.
We need to check what happened to number 16 red.
Yep.
Is that the correct number?
16 red.
Okay.
I have an allegation of a spit in the face.
And the allegation is unproven, or rather the incident proved inconclusive after investigation. But Simon, the whole episode has brought into focus the issue of foul play in sport more broadly and what can be done to address it. But what exactly constitutes foul play in terms of misconduct?
Yeah, so it runs the gamut, Claire, really, from elbowing to biting. Just a few weeks ago, the Man United defender Lisandro Martinez was given a red card and a 3-match ban, actually, for pulling the hair of an opponent. So that's taken very seriously in that sport. This was controversially described as violent misconduct. Now, at the more extreme end, you have eye gouging. From a rugby perspective, I suppose the most recent example took place during Wales' match versus South Africa in Cardiff last November. Now, the disciplinary panel found South African lock Eben Etzebeth had deliberately gouged Alex Mann in the eye. He was actually given a 12-match ban for that.
And rightly so. But from a psychological perspective, why is it that some athletes find it really hard to resist those kinds of destructive behaviours?
Yeah, so my mind always goes back to Eric Cantona's infamous kung fu kick of a spectator who was shouting abuse at him back in 1995. That wasn't even another player. He was in the stand. And afterwards, he said he had only one regret from the incident, Claire. He said it was that he hadn't kicked him even harder. But often these actions, I think, are taken in the heat of the moment when we react emotionally rather than rationally. Sport is emotional. So I asked sports psychologist Anne-Marie Kennedy for her insight.
So there are a few different reasons why players do engage in that sort of destructive behaviour. So you're talking about spitting, pushing, headbutting, things like that. From a psychological perspective, it often comes down to a mix of threat, feeling frustrated, maybe trying to retaliate. Maybe they've lost their status and poor emotional regulation in that moment. In high pressure sport, these players aren't always operating from a calm, reflective place. So, and if they don't have the skills to regulate those feelings quickly, well, then the behaviour can become very reactive, and it becomes a way for them to try and regain some sort of control. Obviously, I won't identify any athlete that I've worked with, but, you know, a common example would be a player who lashes out verbally or physically after feeling that they've been targeted or maybe treated badly. So, you know, an athlete might take a heavy challenge, for example, and feel that the referee hasn't picked up on it, or they might hear the opposition saying something and the next action becomes about retaliation rather than performance. So when we unpack it afterwards, what we often hear and what the players report is they will say things like, oh, I just saw red, or I felt like I had to stand up for myself, or I couldn't just let them get away with that. So what's happening psychologically is that the athlete is reporting having moved into a threat response, and then the foul play behaviour gives them a very kind of short-lived sense of control or justice. And it might feel powerful for them for a second, but ultimately we know that it's not very beneficial for the athlete and often not beneficial for the team either.
A threat response, says Anne-Marie Kennedy. At the extreme end of foul play, though, there's a really egregious example, one that I don't even like to think about, but we are going to talk about this. Mike Tyson and the ear incident back in the 1990s. So take us back to that one, Simon.
Yeah, it's hard to believe 30 years later, Claire. It was on June the 28th, 1997, when Tyson met Evander Holyfield at the MGM Grand in Vegas. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners will remember this. During the third round, Tyson bit into Holyfield's right ear, ripping off a 1-inch chunk of cartilage and spitting it out onto the apron outside the ring. I know. Amazingly, the ref allowed the fight to continue despite that a 2-point deduction. But moments later, Tyson bit Holyfield's other ear, leading, of course, to disqualification, a $3 million fine and a 15-month suspension. Here's how it played out.
Oh, and some nasty stuff in there. There needs to be a bite almost. Holyfield is very unhappy. Look at this. It looked as if Tyson bared his teeth at one stage in the exchange.
Yes,
bit his ear.
He bit his ear. That's what Holyfield was in. A lot of pain from that. You see the blood on the ear. That was definitely a bite.
This is the most unbelievable.
Your eyes on Mike's mouth as much as you can, because you will see it. Now you see he's got his hand. It's a shark bite right there. That is incredible. Look at the reaction again from Holyfield. He can't believe it. He got the second one.
Let's look at it again. Bobby. Watch, Mike. Come inside. This is the second bite of the round. Right on Evander's ear.
It's like Dracula time. I've never seen anything like this.
Dracula time and stomach churning as well, even now, to listen back to it. The big question is, Simon, why did Mike Tyson do it? Can we answer that question?
Yeah, so some speculate, including Holyfield himself, that Tyson did it deliberately to induce his own disqualification rather than, I suppose, face the humiliation as he saw it of being beaten by his opponent. Now, Tyson did say himself afterwards, quote unquote, "I just wanted to kill him." But also, he did admit that it was his revenge for being headbutted in a previous encounter. So a little bit complex, I think.
Yeah, went back a while. Now, they did reconcile on Oprah's couch, didn't they, in 2009? And fair play to them and all of that. But still, we can be absolutely disgusted when we listen back to the audio of it as we were there. But the misconduct sometimes is carried out not necessarily always by the athlete, but by the family members who support them on the sidelines. So we're going back to 1995 in Wimbledon now.
Yeah, I remember this. I was, you know, an avid fan of Wimbledon. I was 12 years old at the time, and I remember watching this. Jeff Tarango was I would describe him as a journeyman American tennis player. He was playing in the third round when he took issue with the umpire over a line call, and he eventually stormed off the court in a sort of outrage, and he actually quit the tournament. He defaulted himself, which is very unusual. But it's what happened after the match, Claire, that really sealed his legacy. His French wife gate-crashed the press conference, claiming that she just slapped the umpire in the face for the way he treated her husband. Here's how it played out. Now, first, we'll hear Tarango on court and then his wife at the presser after.
Can you call the supervisor, please? I have a big beef. You are the most corrupt official in the game, and you can't do that.
Court violation, verbal abuse, point penalty,
no
Mr.
way!
Tarango.
That's it!
Yeah, no.
There was a report that you had slapped him, is that correct?
Yes, I did. And I'm not, and I don't think it's bad. I think it's good. Because this guy deserves a lesson at some point. He can do whatever he wants because he's on the chair. It's just not fair. It's just not fair. Players have nobody to defend them in any situation.
So we get this correct. How many times did you slap him?
I just tried to slap him once. Just just to tell him that it is enough, you know, because Jeff cannot do it. If Jeff slap him, he's out of the tennis world. So I do it because I think I should do it. Somebody should defend him at some point.
Jeff couldn't slap him, so I did. She sounds French, actually, doesn't she?
She is French. She was his French wife.
What happened to Jeff? Like, where did Jeff go?
Yeah,
did you ever hear of Jeff again?
No, Jeff did. He went on to play until 2003, but he did face a significant fine, I think around $30,000
for walking off or for
defaulting himself. It was very tricky for them to penalise him for his wife's actions.
Yeah, so she was right.
But it goes down in Wimbledon's lore as one of the most bizarre incidents in tennis history. Really,
Simon,
does.
Thanks so much. That was great.
Thank you,
Simon
Claire.
Tierney there.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.